Hello everyone, welcome back to the Chelsea Echo and welcome to your preview of Leicester away. An international break has been and gone. Me and Dan have put our feet up for 2 weeks, apparently. It doesn't feel like it. Life's been, you know, tough for me. Alcoholics Anonymous. Also, you know, maybe, you know, that really bad sex therapy that I've been going to. Hypnosis. Physio. I smacked my face into railings by Hammersmith Bridge. So I look like someone you don't want to mess with, because I'm not. So, yeah, I'm a bit screwed. Dan, how was your international break? Did you do anything nice?
I've been quite busy. I went to see randomly Elf the musical last night. I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. I haven't seen Elf. For the movie, that is. I'd never seen a musical. I only discovered there was a musical this year of it, and it wasn't in like one of the huge theaters. It was actually in Wickham randomly. Do you know what always amazes me is, because I do have a history in sort of musical theater, because I was a stage school kid, and that was kind of an early passion of mine alongside film and football, and it always amazes me how incredibly talented understudies are, and it makes you realize how crap I was, you know, and like, you know, how good you have to be. It's like that footballer thing where like a non-league footballer will go, or like, yeah, like conference league footballer will go to their local park and start playing, and they look like the greatest player you've ever seen, and you just realize how incredible you just have to be to even get to like Vanarama level. So then you think to yourself, to even get to the Premier League level, how ridiculous do you have to be? And that's why I always feel when I watch an understudy in a musical, like, do the lead role, look like they are the star, do it so casually, effortlessly. They're not on the post-star. You know, this guy's probably only going to do a handful of performances across the run, but he could be the star. And it's like watching a special effect. Like, I just can't believe someone's that talented.
So hold on. So the show in Wickham, was it the understudies what would be the standard West End shows that go out to do it in the surrounding areas?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it start. I think my better half told me that it started in London, and then I think they're touring the country. But I'm not sure if it's the same production. I don't know. But like, it was.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. Is it like playing for Chelsea? It's like playing for Chelsea and going out on loan to Vitesse.
Probably.
That's what we're looking at here.
Probably.
But nowadays,
Strasbourg.
Like, for people that listen. Yeah. Yeah. Strasbourg. Yeah. Some of these people who listen to this pod are going, these two are fucking weird. Like, yeah, we are. Deal with it. Me and Dan go way back. Cheeky Rubes, Simon McGovern, and that's what it's all about. But aside from that, we're not going to talk about the international break. I've been told by Mr. Producer, Mr. King Gary, that we have to dive into our match previews more. No one wants to hear about what happened 2 weeks ago. And you're absolutely right, because no one cares about what happened yesterday either. So we're going to jump straight into it. We're going to go in and talk a little bit, obviously, about musicals, as we have done. But more importantly, Leicester away, a massive fixture for Chelsea, because it is the first one off the international break, and international breaks are pointless. So I think before we even move on to the game itself, Dan, should we talk for just 2 minutes about how pointless international breaks are when it's about competitions that no one cares about? Did you watch any of the games? Yes or no answer?
Yeah, I was actually at one of the England games randomly.
My apologies.
Well, no. I agree with the general sentiment. Like, it was because a spare basically became available very late on for the Ireland game, and I'd never been to an England game before. So this was kind of me popping the cherry on going to an England game at Wembley. And because it was Ireland, there was a bit more kind of ferocity to it. I was told that actually this was a pretty decent atmosphere comparative to like games against Andorra, which was not that surprising. It doesn't take a lot to beat the sort of atmosphere I suspect you get most weeks for England games that don't mean that much. But it was a really fun second half. It was a pretty shocking first half. It was an enjoyable afternoon out. But I do agree with you that there's just far too much football and far too much meaningless football that I'm not entirely sure what I'm gaining out of this, or kind of like what the players are gaining out of this. So I agree with you that my general concern, my more serious concern, rather than just saying, oh, it's crap, you know, international football so boring is I worry about player exertion and player strain and fatigue, and that eventually leading not only to more injuries, but a game that gets diluted a lot more.
Look, I didn't watch any of the games, I'm not going to lie. Whenever it comes to international football, look, after living next to Wembley for, what, basically 9 or 8 years, I was just so tired of not being able to do anything on match days when you're not at the games. Obviously, the one benefit of Liechtenstein, which, you know, makes me sound incredibly, that made me sound incredibly spoiled, but I did get tickets. I did get to go and watch the football, and I think that's why it's almost like you become a bit desensitized to it. But then, you know, it's just like the amount of times you'd be there. It's like, what? Why is this event even happening? Like, why are we doing this? And it's just on and on and on and on. But, you know, c'est la vie, as they say. And, you know, I'd like to see maybe, you know, eventually it slow down. But it's not going to, because we've got a Club World Cup. We've got a World Cup next year. We've got all the games we've still got to play this season. And it's going to continue to go on and on and on. So let's hope that players don't get injured. Oh, no, wait. There's a player who did get injured who didn't even play in those games. So we're going to talk about that later, because I think we all know who it is we're talking about. It's not easy. Well, it's not easy. It is easy, sorry, to guess who that is. All right? It's not exactly. It's like if you play guess who and go, I'm injured. You know exactly who it is. So we'll talk about him later in the show. But Leicester, Dan, a game which, you know, Chelsea have a pretty good record in, aside from the game you and I went to when Mourinho got sacked, and the game which Conte, was it Conte? Was lost? Was it? You got the FA Cup final, the game where Mourinho got sacked, and the game where Frank got sacked. Yeah. Not Conte. So those aside from those three, Chelsea have been pretty solid. I'm not going to give you the stats because my name's not Tom and I don't like spreadsheets. So how are you feeling heading into this game against Leicester? Is it a game which you look at and go, do you know what? Like, I think we've got a real opportunity here and it's going to be 3 points in the bag. Or are you a bit nervous about heading to the King Power?
No, I think it's a great opportunity. I know, obviously, we don't want to dwell too much on the Arsenal game, but I think the one positive about this upcoming period is it allows Chelsea, hopefully, to start to put a winning run together again, which we had in September, really, wasn't it? And, you know, propel Chelsea up the table. They walk into this game in a pretty healthy position. I know that there's been a lot of discourse. I saw it post-Arsenal where people look at the Premier League table, which is very congested between 3rd and 11th, where there's like 3 points that separates those positions, where Chelsea are 3rd, Tottenham are 11th. And the argument could be that, well, it's not like we're comfortably in the top four, but the argument I'd throw back is if Chelsea were actually 11th, the discourse would be very, very different at this point in the season, even if it is only 3 points. And I feel like there's the opportunity to start this period in a really strong way. I think there are some interesting tactical or more personnel decisions that I feel like Maresca is going to be confronted with and maybe has to explore over this period to get that consistency, because it's kind of a mix of teams, isn't it? There are some games in this run before Christmas where the games you expect Chelsea to win, there are higher profile ones that are more feisty, but I actually feel quite confident, weirdly, going into those games. And then, of course, within that, we've got the end of the Conference League phase. So I'm quietly optimistic about this period, which I guess is a nice feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I mean, you look at the fixtures. We've got Leicester, then we've got Heidenheim, or Heidi High, as the guys around it call me, at Stamford Bridge, which I really do quite like. Villa, Southampton, Spurs, Astana, Brentford, Shamrock Rovers, Everton away in December, which is always when you lose. And then we've got Fulham Boxing Day and Ipswich Town on New Year's Eve Eve. So, you know, it's I feel quietly confident heading into these fixtures, this run of fixtures. I think Villa are always going to be tough because they're a good side. I think it's unfair to write them off despite the form they've been in. Spurs away, I'm not worried about. 3-point lane is what it is. And Everton away in December, always around my birthday, always we seem to lose that game. So, you know, I'm not looking at this and going, oh, this is going to be nice and simple. But I'd like to think that this will separate us from the pack a little bit. I was on TalkSport last night with Paul Ross and spoke to Jake Watson as well. He was part of the Big Show and Leicester Boys pub. We did do an opposition preview, however, we had some audio issues, which means that that is not going to come out, which is a shame because it was a really, really good show. And he was just miserable heading into this. Like, he was saying that, I mean, they've had probably the worst week of their season. They haven't even played. Two or three ACL injuries, players not available, issues with sponsorships where the shirt sponsor's gone bankrupt. You know, it's Leicester have not had a good run. It does make you wonder with them, like, where did it all go wrong? Like, I did ask him this, and I want to get your thoughts. It's like, Leicester, as an entity, right, I think I'm more scared of the thought of Leicester City, not this Leicester team. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like I'm looking back 2-3 years ago and seeing that side rather than the team they have now. I mean, Baldy Deckel, Dover Reed's probably be playing on the right-hand side. Oliver Skip, Harry Winks, Wilfred and Ndidi in midfield. James Justin is going to be playing probably. You know, he's a good player. But aside from that, I mean, Yannick Vestergaard at centre-back. Fez, like, pff, really? Like, I look at them and I'm like, I'm not worried. Mm. I'm not worried. It doesn't strike me as that is Leicester City. The Leicester City team I think of Kasper Schmeichel, Wes Morgan. I think of Christian Fuchs because he had a funny name. But also, you know, that Ben Chilwell. You've got Ricardo Pereira, which is still there. Ndidi, Harvey Barnes, Jamie Vardy, Yuri Tielemans. Like, this amazing, really good team. You know, like, how do you feel about Leicester?
Yeah, it is a very different Leicester to a number of years ago, because they've obviously been relegated in that time and the season hasn't started amazingly. I was a little bit surprised when doing some work for my own preview looking at Leicester that they're only 15th, and I thought they'd be a lot lower actually, given kind of a perception I've had of their start of the year. Obviously, there's been a lot going on at that club, whether it is the fear of points deductions. You know, you just referenced the sponsorship issues. You're losing key players to injury. How do you adapt from the championship, a championship winning season, and then losing the head coach that, you know, preceded and kind of oversaw that? He was kind of very instrumental to the style and kind of everything at the club for a season. So, I mean, it is quite funny. Have you seen a lot of, maybe you delved into this on your show the other night, that I've seen reports that say, oh, you know, Leicester really angry with Maresca for leaving. But all I heard when Chelsea appointed Maresca was that actually there was a lot of discontent, or just it wasn't like they fully bought into Maresca as a coach, at least from a fan perspective when he was there.
It was the hindsight is 2020 benefit that Jake was talking about. I mean, so I've got a friend called Billy who runs a barbershop in Angel. By the way, if people are in North London and want to get a haircut, Urban Route, Angel, fantastic place, really cool place. And you'll see me there because I work downstairs now, or going to be. Basically, he was saying when Maresca was hired at Chelsea, he was like, yeah, enjoy that, mate. Good luck. I was like, oh, right, okay, interesting. And I think the issue they had was the one thing I constantly raise as a historic reminder just to keep myself grounded more than anything, but it kind of, I think, comes across as I'm trying to tell everyone else to stay grounded. It's really just for me, where Maresca December, January time was really comfortable and Leicester were really comfortable at the top of the league, and then it nearly went pear-shaped at the end. I think that was a worry, and then now they've looked and they've gone, we've gone from someone who had a clear identity and how they wanted to play to Steve Cooper, who quite frankly is out of his depth, was obviously the manager of their biggest rivals down the road in Nottingham Forest as well, which is a big reason why they're a bit like, well, why is this happening? They've gone from clear and obvious to no idea. And I think that's what they look at now. I mean, there was the irony, what was it, a few weeks ago, when in the post-match press conference, Harry Winks was saying, yeah, we just looked at what we did last season because we didn't basically make sure we got the result we needed. I was like, so you basically completely threw out the tactics of your manager and went, well, this is what we did really well last year and this is what got us the result. So off the back of that, you're kind of there going, okay, well, Leicester in a precarious position. It feels like, realistically, I think West Ham and Leicester play each other in a few weeks, I believe. Let me just double check that now quickly. Leicester and West Ham play.
Insert lift music right here.
Leicester and West Ham play on the 3rd of December, right? 8:15 kickoff on Tuesday, right? That game, I reckon, is going to be the Moisey Derby. And I say that because I reckon whoever loses that gets David Moyes as their manager.
Interestingly, funny enough, you bringing up West Ham and Leicester together, is it almost feels you've got two clubs who are... Actually, to be fair to Lopetegui, he started to steer the ship a little bit better, hasn't he? I know when we played them, we absolutely battered them, and there was a lot of negativity around West Ham, and there were fears that, oh, you know, is this guy... Have they, you know... West Ham fans demanding for something better, and they feel bad, you know, and now they feel bad about the team, and was it actually better under Moyes and all of that stuff. I think what you see with West Ham and Leicester is the difficulty you have of moving from at times quite a dogmatic or kind of very clear style to a new one. And
yeah,
the awkward transition that comes, especially when clubs usually in football, what you see is clubs want to turn right or turn left dependent on where they've just been, rather than the kind of holistic vision that, well, this coach is going, but we want to find someone in a similar mold because there were principles about this coach that we really liked that we'd like to find in our next coach. And I quite like Steve Cooper as a coach. I think he's done a pretty decent job at Nottingham Forest. I know at the moment you look at Forest, getting them promoted to the Championship is still an impressive haul for that sit.
That's a great feat, but then also afterwards.
Yeah, and I think maybe it was the case of him being in one mindset of a Championship coach, moving to the Premier League, them getting this influx of investment on players, a load of players at the same time. We've seen at Chelsea how that can derail a head coach very quickly. You know, asking a head coach who maybe isn't used to that kind of situation when there's pressure on him. And obviously Nottingham Forest are now flying high. Like they don't just look like an established surviving Premier League team. They might be able to do a bit more than that. But just back to Leicester, you know, they lost arguably one of the most instrumental players in Kiernan Dewsbury Hall. And I can only imagine if you're a Leicester fan, you're just sat there being like, what was the point of us selling that player? Because he hasn't even gone to Chelsea and become a key player. I think it's a pointless signing. I can imagine if you're a Leicester fan and maybe missing Dewsbury Hall a bit, thinking it's what a waste all of that was, because we didn't even get amazing money for him, and he's not even playing for the team that we sold him to. So couldn't we have just kept him? So they're in a bit of a sticky situation, and I kind of feel like they are one of those that I could see going straight back down. And I agree with you that maybe a mid-season coaching change will come. Whether, I don't know, David Moyes, Leicester, you never rule anything out in football. I don't know if that feels like the right fit for me.
Oh, I don't know. Jamie Vardy, Odson Edouard, long ball from the back. Yannick Vestergaard at centre back. Are you kidding me? Yeah. It's David Moyes running all over it.
Maybe.
That's Jordan Ayew, Jamie Vardy. You've got a midfield two of Harry Winks and Oliver Skip. Chuck Wilford and Deeley in there if you want to make it a three. You got some decent fullbacks. Like, I reckon David Moyes could make a real go with that Leicester team. I really do. Make a couple of signings and then sort of just move in the right direction. I think they'd be remarkably solid under him.
Win the Conference League in a couple of years, and then they all hound him out for
exactly.
Lopetegui.
That's exactly what it is. For Lopetegui or like whoever the flavour of the month is in terms of a foreign manager who's done all right about 3 years before that. But look, I think that Leicester is an interesting proposition. But you know, for me, I'm looking forward to the game, man. I really am. So before we do get into that, obviously, you need to know all the numbers. You need to have the one part of the show that has a theme tune. So should we jump straight into it? Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Well then, lads, we've done it. We're through the last international break of 2024. We're done. No more till March of 2025. And we're going into game week 12 of the Premier League. The next one is until after game week 29. That's a lot of football to be played in the next 4 months. And of course, we're back straight away with stats ahead of Chelsea's trip to the King Power Stadium. For that, though, we'll go over to the overall record between the two sides. The total games is 125. Chelsea have won 62 of them, which is a 49.6% win record, drawn 35 and lost 28. As I said, we're back from the last international break of 2024. Thank God. And Chelsea start a run of very favourable fixtures in third place. It all gets underway at the King Power Stadium this Saturday lunchtime, 12:30 kickoff UK time, where, of course, Enzo Maresca takes on his former side for the first time since leaving in the summer. Chelsea become the final team to take on a newly promoted side, having faced none of Southampton, Ipswich or this weekend's opponents, Leicester City, up to this point. Wolves were the most recent one, if you're interested. But they, of course, played Southampton just before the international break. In the last 10 games between these two teams, Chelsea have won 6, drawn 2 and lost 2 against the Foxes, with those losses coming back-to-back in the Premier League in January 2021, which was Frank Lampard's final match for Chelsea, and the FA Cup final in May of 2021. We won't talk about that Ben Chilwell disallowed goal. Since that defeat, it's been almost plain sailing for the Blues, actually, against Leicester, winning 5 and drawing 1. Most recently, that included a 4-2 win over Enzo Maresca's Leicester in last year's FA Cup quarter-final, when stoppage time goals from Kani Chukwuemeka and a Noni Madueke wonder strike saw the Blues through to the final 4, and eventually the final as well. At the King Power, Chelsea have won 6 of their last 10 matches, so it is something of a happy hunting ground for the Blues of London. Onto the managerial records, and Enzo Maresca, well, as almost always, I've said it so many times already this season, he's never managed against Leicester before, but he has, as I've just mentioned, of course, managed for Leicester against Chelsea, as we heard just now. His opponent on Saturday, Steve Cooper, incredibly, has an unblemished record against Chelsea, having drawn 2 and 1-1 against the Blues. Most recently, that included a 1-0 win over Chelsea when managing Nottingham Forest last season at Stamford Bridge, Anthony Elanga scoring the winner there. Let's hope that Mr. Maresca can get a win over his old side and put an end to Steve Cooper's incredible winning run over Chelsea. Up the Chelsea, but it is back to you in the studio.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Daniel.
Feliz numbers, dad. Da, 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 da. Feliz numbers, dad. Da, 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 da.
No, 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 no. It's November. Are we doing this now?
We're nearly a month out. I think once you get past the 20th of November, I think it's more than acceptable. I admit there's a bit of leeway on celebration, on like putting your decorations up, right? I admit, right? But the idea that it's now silly. We spoke about Elf the Musical at the start of this show, and you were like, "Oh yeah, Elf the Musical. I love Elf the Musical." So don't give me all this anti-Christmas stuff now.
No, I am giving you this anti-Christmas. This is utter Christmas nonsense. Put me in front of that green wall, mate. That's exactly what I should be doing right now. I'm gonna stand in front of that green wall with a Christmas. That's utter Christmas nonsense. You don't do Christmas until the 1st of December. That's the only time it's appropriate. Because also, bearing in mind, the Christmas period runs to the 6th of January. Mm. So you still have a whole month, basically, to enjoy it.
Okay.
So, you know, I personally think you're talking utter bollocks, mate. You know? Or see, like, right. I'm going to ask you one question.
Don't ask me, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Because...
No, I'm not going to ask you that because it
okay,
is.
Okay, that's great relief.
That I agree with, that Die Hard is definitely a Christmas movie, but have you played Mariah Carey yet?
No, I actually haven't.
You're going to after the pod now, aren't
well,
you?
Well, I could play her right now.
You're going to do it to spite me. We'll get in trouble and it means that we'll have to copy. I'm not doing that. It's Louis, why is there a copyright song in it? I don't know, it was Dan! I'm sorry! Don't make me get in trouble again, all right? We're not doing that. So, let's jump into it, though. We've had numbers. We've had Dan's utter Christmas nonsense, right? Let's talk about the Chelsea team that is going to head to Leicester City. So, do you want to do the 11 first? Or do you want to just sort of delve into how you feel about us a little bit more first?
Now let's just jump into the 11 because I think, you know, obviously we need to delve in a little bit to Reece James. I assume that will come at the right back position.
Shock. Yeah. Oh my God. He's injured again, is he? I literally just have no feeling for that anymore. Anyway, we'll move on. Let's go through the team. So in goal, it's going to be Robert Sanchez. Unfortunately, it is what it is. No, a lot we can do about that. Game's a game, lads. All right, this is what it is. Left back, Mark Cucurella is definitely going to be holding down his space off that tremendous performance against Arsenal, which I think wasn't spoken about enough. The numbers he put up in that game, fantastic, but also just rattling Bukayo Saka to the point of his usual limping off, you know, even better. Centre backs. Now, Levi Colwill is available, Dan. Wesley Fofana also available. Do you just keep it simple and keep it that way?
Yeah, I don't think there's much to say here. I actually think some credit for Fofana, who I think had his best performance of the season against Arsenal.
I agree. He was spectacular against them. Like, it was a really, really solid performance by him. Really impressed by what he's been putting out numbers-wise. I think he's going to get better. He's only getting better. I still think Chelsea need to sign another centre-back. That is still something I consider a necessity. A player of seniority to help those players. And I get people saying, well, they'll get better if they keep playing. But if you look at a lot of young players when they start in those positions and they just get better and keep playing because they don't have that person to look to for the quality that they need to take them up to that next level, they kind of hit a ceiling eventually rather than have those people they can look to for the advice. So I'd like to see another centre-back brought in January, actually.
Because, yeah, if Fofana and Colwill, their performances continue to grow, then I do buy the argument we'll just stick with them as the back two, the first choice, and you just let them develop and, you know, marinate and get better. But I think the issue you've got is a similar issue you have in central midfield, in my opinion, which is depth and quality depth. It's all right having bodies. What I mean by that is players that you could comfortably sit there and go, they can come into the first team and you'd be confident you're going to get an all right performance from them. I think the issue you've got in defence especially, and also in central midfield, is I feel there's quite a steep gap and quite a steep decline between the first choice currently and the rest. I think Tosin, arguably, if we see a little bit more of him, could become more than that. But especially with Disasi and Badiashile, they're two that they're not trustworthy enough to be the starters, are they?
No, I agree. Now, look, me and you have touched on that so many times at this point where it's almost like you want to put your head through a wall. It's kind of sitting there and going, right, okay, so there needs to be an improvement there. Whoever we go and get, because evidently we are going to pick up a centre-back, then, you know, it'll be interesting to see who comes in through the door.
I've been sitting at the bar with Trevor Chalobah.
do you know what? I spoke to the lads who started that chant. And they said it's supposed to be based on Outer Space by The Prodigy. I was like, how? Where is the rhythm to that? It's like, I'm just sitting at the bar with Trevor Chalobah. But okay, now I can hear it. But also, just that, you just do that on repeat. It's not that inventive. Like, lads, we need to do better. Do you remember the one I came up with for Ethan Ampadu years ago? There's a player I could bring back. I'll have him back. I'm saying that sarcastically, by the way. Obviously, I wouldn't.
Yeah, already, Ethan Ampadu feels like a pub question.
How much did Chelsea sign Ethan Ampadu from Exeter City for? I can tell you, £400,000. You're welcome. But I remember I did that, right? Talk about Ethan Ampadu to 99 Red Balloons. I'm so happy with it. But no one ever enjoyed it because I think it just makes me sad. I'm just musically gifted, Dan, you know? I can't help that I'm a bassist who's good with his fingers. Wait, no, didn't mean it like that. Let's just right back. Excuse me. That's a bit Alan Partridge, that, wasn't it? Right, let's just dive into Reece James.
I don't think he needs to be dived into, really. I think he needs less diving into. Although I don't think that's why he gets injured. It doesn't. That's the more concerning thing. It isn't because people dive into him. I was going to release an individual podcast about this. Unfortunately, I just didn't get time to upload it. Here's the question I have for you. I'm lost for... It's kind of tiring to go over the same point over and over again, right? But I'm not entirely sure what Chelsea is supposed to do with Reece James at this point. Because I think they've done close to what the most cautious people would want Chelsea to be towards Reece James' situation. Maresca limited him to one game a week, played him in arguably quite a reserved role comparative to what we're prone to seeing from Reece. We want to see him bombing down that flank, crossing balls, you know, getting back and forth, box to box kind of player. He hasn't been doing that. He's been playing left back. He's been playing kind of in a back three with Colwell and Fofana. And he didn't even start the game against Arsenal, too. I think the surprise of most of us, he came on very late in the game, and he gets injured during the international break. So what do you do with Reece James? That's my issue. Is it's very hard to know how you're supposed to manage a player like this at this point without it always ending up in the same place.
Well, I mean, look, I'm just reading now. Basically, I've just seen that Reece James is going to be having another scan next week, according to Matt Law.
Minor. This is the thing. It was called a minor injury. And I was like, no, it's not a minor injury.
No, in fact, so Matt Law, slight change. Reece James will have a scan next week to find out how long his latest hamstring injury will keep him out. He and Chelsea face a nervous wait. So, off the back of that, it's very much a case of, like, what do you do? Like, how do you handle it? And I think at this, like, when I was asked about it yesterday, I just went, to be honest, I have no feeling to this at this point. I'm very much a case of Reece James injured again. Mal Augusto's a good deputy. Cool. Right, crack on. Like, Reece James is going, I think, going to become that Ledley King figure, which you roll out on the odd occasion when you really need him, or he'll go elsewhere. At this point, it's like there's like, I don't know how you'd handle him. I'd look, if he's never available, and the best ability is availability, right? As the saying goes, if he is never available, as harsh as this sounds, he probably shouldn't be the club captain.
And as well, he's being paid a decent wage, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not one of the low earners, and this is a problem. Like, what, this is the issue, right? Because in my head, I'm sort of thinking, okay, so, like, I agree with you, right? You go down a route where he basically just becomes a cameo player, where effectively he'll come off the bench or he'll start the odd game. And that's kind of weird, like, for kind of a player that you kind of feel talent-wise and impact-wise should be week in, week out, playing 9 times out of 10 for you, but he can't really do that. Or, I don't know, you eventually get to a stage where arguably Chelsea have already done this. They're already in this mindset, and I think they should be in this mindset. You treat it like Reece James isn't really a first-team player. He's kind of, I don't know how to describe it, like a loanee maybe, or like you know you get him for a few weeks during, you know, several periods of the season. Like, he in WWE, he's kind of like the returning legend who only comes through in like the Royal Rumble to WrestleMania phase, like John Cena is now. Like, John Cena appears at very sporadic times during the year, but he's not a regular roster figure in the WWE. That's what Reece James is probably now has to be categorized as, Chelsea. So you don't build your whole company, you don't build your whole squad around him, because he's not going to be there for a majority of the calendar. They've already done that with Mal Augusto. I think the next stage is who can compete with Mal Augusto. Is it Josh Akpom? We've got the whole contract dispute thing, which I think is just a little bit self-defeating, especially because he could be a pretty good deputy to Mal Augusto. So that's where it is. And I've at times had people have a go at me being like, are you being really harsh or not having enough sympathy for Reece James? I have all the sympathy in the world for Reece James. I think it's a football tragedy. I think it's a tragedy that it feels like this incredible, astonishing talent, we're being robbed of a potentially heroic career. But we have to live in reality.
Agreed. I mean, I think I get people saying we're being a bit harsh, saying, oh, you know, he shouldn't be club captain, he shouldn't be X, Y, and Z. But if he's not available, like, you can't have someone like that about, because they're clearly not there. I mean, look, this from the BBC an hour ago in terms of recording, his injury record since the start of the 22-23 season, Chelsea, who had 87 games, Reece James had made 30 appearances, and 22 of those are starts, right? That's 1,906 minutes. He started 25% of the matches and missed 65% of the games. Your captain can't be missing for nearly 70% of the of two seasons. Like, that's insane. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And then, like, I appreciate everything how hard he works and all the stuff he's doing. Like, it's horrible. It is a football tragedy, right? And I'm not gonna lie, again, if an offer came in January, Real Madrid go, we'll have him. It's 60 million quid. Do you know what? I'm not saying no.
So Malagosto starts.
Yeah, there you go. Malagosto right back. Sorted. So there's your back line. Your midfield will be what, Dan? Because I'm thinking Moyes, Caicedo and Enzo, they're not going to start straight after international duty. But we've got no Romeo Lavia. Oh, no. Romeo Lavia is available, but they're saying he might not be. So
Yeah. He wasn't. It's weird because I was preparing for him to be ruled out and he wasn't. So I think Lavia and Caicedo should be the first choice midfield two for important games, and I think that would be the case here. And then you could bring on Enzo. Narratively, it would kind of be quite ironic for Dewsbury Hall to make his first Premier League start against his old club, and probably his only Premier League start for Chelsea. So I guess the narrative is there, but I hope that Lavia is ready, and I hope that Caicedo's had enough training in him to at least play an hour, 70 minutes maybe.
So should we just put Keane and Dewsbury Hall in for shits and giggles?
No, I can't. I can't honestly ever argue for a Dewsbury Hill start in a Premier League game. Like, it just isn't
so
happening.
So Caicedo, Lavia. I mean, Cole Palmer's going to go in at the number 10 slot. Left hand side, I think Pedro Neto just speaks for itself. Up front, Nicholas Jackson's available, isn't he? He's not suspended, or is he suspended?
Yep.
Yeah. Because he's one yellow card away, isn't he? So right now, Nico Jackson starts up front. Or does he? Now, Christopher Nkunku obviously is a big conversation here. He's obviously stated that he might leave. He wants to leave. You know, he's Chelsea's top goal scorer right now. He isn't getting a look in the first 11. Do you think that is something we just accept? Or do you think we might see maybe a slight change to see Christopher Nkunku maybe try and break into this team?
See, I don't think this is necessarily going to happen in this game, but I do think it is one of the big narratives in this period of the season. Because I think the next period of the season, I really do think that Maresca has to try and find a way to get Nkunku in this team more regularly. I just think he's too good to ignore. He's already the top goal scorer this season. I think he's done everything he can in big games to perform. To the most part, I think with the exception of Newcastle, which sure, I guess we could all argue was the most important of those big games. But you know, I still think Nkunku, when you see his impact off the bench against Bournemouth earlier in the year, I think he's just too good a player to ignore and to just let rot, basically, and eventually leave without much conjecture. Like, I think it is important to try and get him in. And we know that Palmer can maybe play off the right and still move centrally because he's that good a player. He did it consistently last year. And there's got to be competition for places, right? Like, there's got to be a sign that meritocracy is there. I think Pedro Neto has proven it. And another point, just on like what I think is more realistic to change rather than him being thrown into the starting 11 on Saturday lunchtime, it's more, I don't want to see Enzo Maresca's first two subs continue to be Enzo Fernandez and Mikhailo Mudryk. For me, Nkunku should be the first attacking sub on the pitch. That should be kind of binary. That should happen every single week. If he's not starting, he should be the first off the bench in an attacking sense. And I was really frustrated in the Man United game and the Arsenal game. Mudryk comes on, shows no game intelligence whatsoever. He should not be in front of Nkunku. It just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. And I don't believe that it makes much sense. So that's something I want to see. And I think it will be a big conversation. But I don't think it will happen this game. And I think on the right, I still think Nonni will probably start. Okay. He had quite a good international break. And but I think his, in the attacking section, the three behind the striker, I think his is one of the roles is maybe more vulnerable just because his performances haven't been that amazing. And Sancho's now back, which I think is exciting. And Nkunku could play in his place, kind of arguably in a new shift, Palmer over. So Yeah, I think that's going to be, I think that will be the big thing heading into Christmas, in my opinion. I think that will be one of the big conversation points we're going to have regularly, is getting Nkunku in the team, especially if the team isn't winning. Earlier in the year, when we did go on that winning run and things felt very positive, it wasn't, as always is the case with football, wasn't really a narrative, because you couldn't really argue against Maresca when the team's winning games. If the team stops winning games and attacking-wise there is a little bit of a drop-off in standards and output, then naturally that conversation is going to come to the fore a lot more, which it has in recent weeks.
I agree. Well, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, look, the 11's going to probably be what we've expected to be. Enzo Maresca has found his team now, so it's very much a case of going, okay, well, look, let's just see what happens now. Let's see how Chelsea develop. And like you said, that big conversation over Christmas is going to be Christopher Nkunku, where he maybe finds himself in this Chelsea team and this Chelsea setup. I think it'd be a shame to lose him. I think he's such an important player that Chelsea really should do everything they can to keep hold of him. This is where you maybe need to bend it around a little bit, because he has done a lot to try and force himself into this team. He's not a lone striker. You know, that was something that we knew when we signed him, to get the best out of him. He needs to play off of somebody, and there's a real opportunity for him to do it with Nicholas Jackson. And I think that those two together with Cole Palmer and a bit more of a free role on the right-hand side, realistically probably making that like attacking front three extremely potent. Look, I'm not against it. I really like the idea. So we'll have to see what happens. But ladies and gentlemen, that has been your match preview of Chelsea heading up to the King Power in the early kickoff on Saturday. But enough of what we think. Obviously, you only care about our opinion. We're the most important Chelsea opinions out there. But there is one man who we may be put above ourselves. So ladies and gentlemen, let's head to the bald man, Enzo Maresca.
In terms of going back to the King Power Stadium, facing your former club, how are you feeling about it?
First of all, excited and also thankful, because was fantastic season. I met there people that it's very difficult to find in football. The owner, his family, they are fantastic people, fantastic human being. They care for players, staff, all the people that they work inside the club, and you can see that. The sport director, John Rutkin, to be honest, was fantastic season, first of all, because I met good people. And then in terms of players, was top, was fantastic. There was fantastic connection between the players and the staff. And I think this is something that also you need to create when you want to reach something important. And I will be thankful always, all my life, to that squad, because first of all, most of them, I'm still in contact with them. So we have special connection. And was fantastic season.
From a tactical point of view, can it help with you knowing the team and the players so well?
Probably it's in the other side. They know exactly what we do. And so it's in both sides. But we're gonna try to adjust small things, small details, to see if we can do something different. But I think it's more from their side that they know us better than we know them, because we are watching the game that they are playing.
How much does international break performances factor into players actually starting at Chelsea? We've seen Felix take his chance with Portugal, and you mentioned Felix and Palmer potentially playing in the pockets together soon.
Yeah, this is this could be a target for the future, to see both them to play together. And the international break is good, first of all, for the ones that they don't go with the international team to recovery. And the ones that they go with the international team, some of them, they like Joao, did fantastic. But Joao is doing fantastic with us since day one. I said many times, the only problem is to try to find balance when we try to prepare the game. And then it's for us, but it's for all the club. After international break, it's always a little bit doubt, because you don't know how they come back. As I said, today is the first session, 48 hours before the game, that we work with 12, 13, 14 players that they were with the international team. And we need to see how they come back. Some of them, they come back this morning from Argentina, from South America. So it's not easy.
With Reece, is it a case of maybe he'll play like a few games and then there might be a small injury problem until he's fully over his injury problems? Is it kind of expected that he'll have setbacks before he'll be fully fit for a long period?
No, it's, as I said, he felt something. He has to be out for sure this weekend, and then we see. At the moment, we don't know for how long, and then we see.
You think you can get him on the pitch, though, for a long period of time, like, say, several months where he has no problems?
For sure, but in this moment, it's not happening, but hopefully it can could happen soon.
Well, those are the gaffer's thoughts. Numbers were said, opinions were given. Dan talked about Christmas far too early. And this has been the Chelsea Echo. If you have enjoyed the pod, please do make sure you give us a 5-star review on all good platforms where you listen to us. Could listen to us on Bebo, if that's still a thing. Maybe. I'll have a look. Dan's on Blue Sky, if you want to go and give him a follow there. I've not jumped across yet. I'm having to think about it. But obviously, you can find the Chelsea Echo on all good social media platforms. And obviously, find us on all our socials, because I've got my Twitter back. That happened over the international break. So I will be annoying you more on there as well. But thank you for listening, guys. And we'll see you later. Ta-da.